All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could be with us today. What do you see when you think about your dream vacation? Are you relaxing on a beach, or maybe you're doing something more active, like skiing in the Swiss Alps? This hour, I'm talking with a travel consultant and a travel writer about what it takes to go on that vacation you've thought about for years, that bucket list trip, and how the pandemic changed the way many of us view travel and how we value vacations. I want to hear from you as we talk about this. Is there a dream vacation on your bucket list? How did you plan your trip and why did you pick it? And if you are holding off on traveling, tell us why. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. First, though, I want to check in with NPR senior economics contributor Chris Farrell, as we do each Monday. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So a lot of turmoil in the U.S. economy right now, especially with the stock market down for the quarter, the month, the week.
The numbers are really striking. Just very quickly, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 21% this year, the S&P 500 down 25%, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ is down 32%. And the bond market is also getting hammered as interest rates are rising. And since we're talking about travel today, I thought, you know, just take a quick little trip around the world, because what's happening in the U.S. is happening elsewhere. This is really global turmoil. So the economies of Europe, I mean, they're slowing because of the Ukraine war, and inflation is spiraling higher in Europe. And there are really serious concerns about the energy crisis that Europe is going to face as Russia shuts the taps of gas going to Europe. Britain's new government, that kind of sparked a whole financial crisis, and it has higher inflation, has a weakening economy. China's economy is slowing, and it's partially reflecting the zero COVID policy that China has, but it also has its real estate market is imploding. And then many emerging economies are reeling from higher food prices, again, reflecting Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But the strong dollar, and the dollar has been soaring, Angela, for a long time now, and that hurts those emerging markets that have large debts or have to pay for commodities. Mm-hmm. A lot of commodities are denominated in dollars. So a lot of the emerging markets are also being affected.
Add to that Hurricane Ian. In economic terms, how much will Hurricane Ian impact the economy? I mean, there's so much destruction and damage done in Puerto Rico, Florida, South Carolina, elsewhere.
I know. Having the pictures just been heartbreaking awful. And just awful. So, I mean, and the tragedy is there. But if you're taking a look from an economic point of view, the costs from the cleanup and the rebuilding is going to take years. Destruction is going to cost Florida tens of billions of dollars, and it's going to have a hit to the U.S. economy. But here's sort of the weird thing, and it's true with all natural disasters. You take this big hit, and it will hit the Florida economy, South Carolina economy, the U.S. economy. But then because of the rebuilding efforts, the reconstruction, you get a big kick in spending. So the effect disappears with the passage of time.
We've talked about this before, Chris, but the signals about the U.S. economy, they still seem sort of mixed. Government statisticians are reporting the economy has shrunk, but employers are still hiring.
I know. You get this sense like, what is going on here? I mean, the most recent figures from the government on gross domestic product, GDP, right? Mm-hmm. Our broad measure of the economy, it shrank for two quarters in a row. All right. So, and the consensus expectation among economists for the third quarter, which ended just on last Friday, is that we're going to see a little bit of growth, not much, just a tiny bit of growth. But household spending has stayed healthy. And one reason is that households are finding themselves dipping into savings because of higher prices. You know, they're paying more. But then the unemployment rate, you know, more people have jobs these days and employers are still scrambling for workers. They're still hiring workers, which is a really good thing, especially for workers who are living on low and unstable incomes. That said, the Federal Reserve, it's hiked its benchmark interest rate 3 times in a row by 75 basis points each. The Fed has convinced the markets now, look, we are determined to defeat inflation. And that does mean we are going to see higher unemployment.
Housing construction, hiking the, you know, how does the Fed, you know, hike its, you know, it's hiking its benchmark interest rate, the Fed funds rate. How does that affect the housing market?
I know, because it's, you know, this Fed funds rate, it's overnight money. It's just, you know, they raise it. And the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis has a very good little sort of primer on this. And the analogy that they use is like throwing, you know, pebbles into a pond. So you raise your short-term interest rate, that has an immediate effect on other short-term interest rates. But then as the ripples go out, it affects things like credit card rates. Credit card rates are up really high. And
high, but they're even higher?
21.4%. Oh, so, I mean, that's really up. And by the way, have you noticed how credit card rates went up really high? But the savings rate, I mean, what you're getting paid on your savings account, that's moving a lot slower. I mean, you're not getting a whole lot there. And then, of course, you know, mortgage rates, 7%.
7%.
And, you know, this is probably the sector of the economy, Angela, that's most sensitive to what the Federal Reserve has been doing. We're seeing a correction going on in the market. I think that's probably the right term. No one actually knows what a correction means when you come to the housing market. But I think the conversation out there is about a decline of about 10 to 15%. We are definitely seeing slower sales. It's starting to have an impact on prices. But we don't, and I think most economists would agree with this, no one's really talking about a reprise of 2008 when you saw nationwide, on average, housing prices go down by 30%. And the underlying reason, there's just a shortage of housing. Mm. There just is.
Now, you mentioned at the beginning, household spending has stayed pretty reasonably healthy. This hour, we're going to be talking about vacations and travel, the return to travel. You just got back from a bike trip in Portugal. Tell us about planning that vacation and what were you thinking at the time? Like, I'm going to go to Portugal.
Well, it's an adventure. It's a country that I'd never been to. And it's been a long time since I've done a bike trip. Mm-hmm. By the way, I am a true convert and a big believer in electronic bikes. They are a wonderful thing when you're going up hills. and, you know, by pure chance, pure coincidence, the strong value of the dollar helps you when you're overseas. But, you know, I was thinking about this travel and what lessons that I take away. And one of the big lessons I took away, Angela, is this labor shortage that you and I have talked about, mm-hmm. that everyone is dealing with. It is really true in the travel industry, the leisure industry, the hospitality industry.
What did you see? What happened to you?
You know, what happened is the cycle operators were overwhelmed just by the number of bikers that are there. It's just numbers more than they've seen. And so we had to deal with some changes to the plan, to the itinerary that were unexpected. Nothing terrible, nothing bad. But, you know, and people are working hard, but they're overwhelmed. And so my sense is if you're going to be traveling, be flexible. Because if you have, you know, it has to go A, B, C, D, E. This is what I'm paying for. This is what I want.
You're going to be disappointed.
You're going to be disappointed because not because anyone is trying to disappoint you. It's because they're overwhelmed.
And you told me this touring company, they gave you some numbers. Like they lost all their business and then it came back.
Damn it. So the first year that they'd gone into Portugal, they had 60 bike trips, right? Then they had less than 19 last year. And in the months of September alone, they had 60.
So it came back big.
Being that big.
And so then they've got to find people to support all
those reservations. To support that. So they were scrambling around. And that's why, you know, reservations where you thought you were in one place you're in a different place. But still, you're in a place. You got a bed. You got a shower. Right. Well, okay, you have a bath.
Okay. All right. Now it's time to say goodbye to you.
Yes.
Because we're talking about showers and bathing. Thank you, Chris. No, I appreciate hearing all of that. We'll see you again next Monday morning.
I'll see you then.
All right. Well, let's talk more about travel and taking that dream vacation. And what has changed since the start of the pandemic when we think about traveling? We all have our own idea of what a vacation should look like, what type of trip will make us happy, and what we really want to see and feel when we are far away from home. But for a lot of people, you know, traveling was really put on hold because of COVID-19. So they waited And now, with travel restrictions eased, people are seizing this moment to make up for lost time. Listen to these numbers. On average, Americans were projected to spend more than $2,600 per person on summer trips this year. And the trips weren't all domestic. Travel to Europe was up 600% over last year. And even with inflation, vacation spending this past summer was expected to be up about 90% over the pre-pandemic summer of 2019. This is all according to insurance company Allianz Partners. So here's what I want to know as we talk about this. Is there a trip on your bucket list? How did you plan your dream vacation and why did you pick it? And if you're still holding off on traveling, tell us why. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's bring in our two guests. We have on the line Elaine Glusak. Elaine is the Frugal Traveler columnist for the New York Times travel section. Good morning to you, Elaine. Also on the line, we have Jenny Michelson. Jenny is the sales director at Travel Beyond in Wayzata. Hi, Jenny.
Good morning, Angela.
Hi. Wasn't it fun listening to Chris talk about his bike trip?
It was.
Right? And one of the things you said to me when you came in is like, yes, you need patience if you're traveling right now. Tell me more about that.
Just listening to what Chris had mentioned resonated very well with me, just within the industry and being the person in reservations, if you will. Mm-hmm. There, it is taking a lot longer to get answers for reservations, which can make it people a little bit more impatient, or reservations are gone by the time for hotels, things like that. And one client, I love her example or her comment when they were heading to the airport is everybody has to have their patient pants on because that's what you need these days.
Your patient's pants. Pack those, please.
Pack those patient pants.
Right. Because it's what they're delays or things are not according to the plan.
Delays, also just staff shortage, hotel occupancy, restaurants. It's taking longer to get service, just everything in general. Right. It just takes a little bit longer and we all have to be more patient.
And in general, what have you seen among Minnesotans when it comes to travel the past few months or past year? You know, have you had conversations with people who say they are done with waiting to go on vacation?
Very much, yes. Mm-hmm. A lot.
What do they share? Is that you know, they're making up for lost time or they just that was yet another loss in their lives?
Many people had trips planned for 2020. And so just that lost time and also had on their minds of where they wanted to travel 2021, 2022 and beyond. Mm-hmm. And just the last about 2 years for a lot of people, that was people were done. And I think the where it really was evident is when the U.S. government drop the antigen testing to come back into the United States. Mm-hmm. That is where we saw a huge influx of people wanting to travel. And not to say not that there are people that are not ready to travel, and I respect that, of course, as well, for many reasons. But those that are wanting to travel, they just were ready. They have many of them have already had their COVID vaccines. They've done the right things. And they're ready to go.
You know, on this program, we frequently talk about how the pandemic has changed us. And so many of us experienced grief and loss and just constant disruption to our peace the last 2.5 years. And do you think that's affected how much people value taking a trip with the people they care about the most?
I have seen an increase of family travel. Right. And so your point of just if things that were lost over the last years, I think it's more important than ever to be traveling with family or friends that they just hadn't been able to travel with for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to reconnect with Elaine, who's our travel writer, and she specializes on frugal travel and saving money. And so what's the strategy? If you know you have this dream trip you want to take, but it costs a lot of money, what do people do to sort of finance it?
So the areas, just speaking for what I what I do at Travel Beyond, our specialties are Africa, Southeast Asia, and South America. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that might not be a trip that you're just going to decide last minute. People have decided last minute, though, but not many. And so I think already people have in their minds what type of budget that they need to experience that type of trip that they're looking for. And in terms of just for savings, people are already aware of what they need to spend that they're saving up for that trip.
But can't you like plan a trip like, this is going to cost a lot of money, so I'm going to do it in 2 years?
Yes. Oh, yes.
That's
yes.
what I mean. So you have those conversations, or you see people like giving it enough time that you can create this like budget for it.
Right. Yes. As long as we have a budget to work with, mm-hmm. then and a time frame, then we are able to make it work. Yes.
All right. Well, we are talking about dream vacations and bucket list trips. And I want to hear your stories as we talk about this, the return to travel coming out of the pandemic with both a travel writer and a travel consultant. How did you plan your dream vacation and why did you pick it? Or are you still waiting? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. We're going to be bringing in our other guest, Elaine Glusak, who's the frugal travel columnist for the New York Times, in just a moment. We're trying to reconnect with her. But while we wait, let's take some phone calls. In Woodbury, we have Kim on the phone. Hi, Kim. What do you want to tell us?
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I just got back from not the dream vacation, but a very last-minute spontaneous trip because I had all these air miles accumulated. And
I'd
only been to London briefly. Years ago, so it's like, let's explore England a little further. And that was an easy trip to plan. I went solo. I mixed Ooh. Up staying in hostels with some lovely inns in the Cotswolds. And then I used every mode of transportation, including renting a car for half of the 10 days I was there, because that's a very efficient way of getting around and exploring.
Go, Kim.
And it was a breeze.
Tell me about
it
going.
I saw all sorts of theater in London. That was the highlight.
Tell me about going solo, going alone. Tell us more about that.
Well, I typically do. I've been mm-hmm. traveling solo since I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. Not always, but mm-hmm. I guess I have a pretty high confidence level, and no one can ever come up with the budget or the time or wants to do everything I would like to do. So it's
yes.
a great way to be open to meeting other people, I have found. In my travels over the years. So,
yeah, traveling
yeah,
with a group.
I'm a little bit jet-lagged, actually.
It can be challenging. And so, Kim, what do you think this did for you? Talk to me about the anticipation of the trip and then coming back. How did it make you feel, having had that time away?
Well, driving on the left side in a stick shift car, that built up my confidence. But, you know, the world has not stopped. I know that they appreciate us coming over there and with an interest in their culture. And, you know, it's interesting. I arrived just after the day after the Queen's funeral, which mm-hmm. was interesting mm-hmm. in and of itself. So that was an interesting, a different insight into British culture. But, this trip, I've traveled much further afield. England is very easy to travel throughout, solo or otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, with their trains and their buses and, what?
Kim, I'm glad you got back safely. I'm glad you had a wonderful time. Thank you for sharing that. And we have Elaine back with us. Again, Elaine Glusak is the Frugal Traveler columnist for the New York Times travel section. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Angela. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So let's go back to sort of the beginning. We've been talking about, we know COVID-19 is still with us, but we are still, seeing new cases, but traveling increased dramatically over the summer. And why is that? Tell us about some of the reasons that you're hearing about why travel has come back so strong.
Oh, dramatically. That's a very good word for it. I think after the pandemic, it's still with us, as you mm-hmm. know, but after vaccines became available, people suddenly wanted to go out and, you know, change the scenery, change their view, see people they love. There are so many compelling reasons that people wanted to go. Travel is compelling. I mean, it enriches us. It educates us. It enables us to connect with others. I mean, Mark Twain said it best when he said travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. And I think once people were able to move again safely, they wanted to pursue those goals again.
Now, Elaine, you're the frugal traveler columnist. Let's talk about the money. Can we still travel and be frugal?
Yes. I mean, things are more expensive, I think, as your economic contributor noted, you know, inflation has sort of impacted everything from, you know, what you're going to pay at hotels and vacation rentals and airfare and car rentals. But, you know, there are always strategies and ways to reduce those costs. You know, traveling in the off season is, you know, a great way to save. If you're going to go somewhere in the summer where it's really high season, you know, you're going to pay top dollar versus, say, fall when it's a little bit cooler and you may get, you know, 50% off. That's wow. a huge savings. And you also probably, you know, have fewer other, you know, travelers competing with you for things like restaurant reservations. So there's lots of compelling reasons to go in the off season. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, great bargain alternatives for travelers just in the way that they travel. I think your last caller, you know, Kim, mm-hmm. talked about staying in hostels. You know, I've written about abroad, you can stay in college dorms, actually. They opened them up, or they did before the pandemic, to travelers who would come over to New York in the summer. So there are, you know, lots of interesting ways to save money and still have a great experience.
And what is your take on the labor shortages that we're seeing in just about every, you know, facet of travel industry, with the airlines, the hotels, rental cars and such? How have you seen that affect people who are traveling?
Yeah, that's the worst of it. And it's introduced a lot of chaos in everything. We especially see it at airports. Mm-hmm. You know, you might not have enough TSA agents or enough people manning the airline counters. And so, you know, things are slower and you're in lines longer. And I mean, patience is just the order of the day. Right now, I was talking to a friend who was checking into a hotel, and it was a college town. So it was a big game was going on, but he said it took them over an hour to check into their hotel, just waiting in line. Mm. And when they got to the front and said something to the clerk said, "We're hiring."
Wow.
Nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. So to have that in mind when you go, that it may not go the way that it's planned. Jenny described it, our other guest, as pack your patient's pants.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That's good advice. All right. Let's take more phone calls. As we talk about the return of travel, taking dream vacations, what are you thinking? What are you planning? What are you doing? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's go to Northern Iowa and talk to Richard. Good morning, Richard. What do you want to share with us?
Good morning, Angela. I thoroughly enjoy your show every day.
All right. You sound happy. Have you just been on vacation?
Yes, I have. And now I'm for the airport in Rochester. I'm going to fly down and see my mother in South Carolina.
Okay.
But I just, one of my dream vacations, I went to Europe to take a bicycle trip. I've done Ragbri 5 years, the long run across Iowa. And this, I thought, I'll up the game. So I started at Donisschlagen, which is the beginning of the Danube River, to ride bike to Budapest, which is 850 miles. Well, with the heat this summer, I made it about halfway, because it was almost 100 degrees every day. And I'm 8 years old, and I thought, I want to stop and stay alive.
How old are you again, Richard?
I'm 70.
70.
And I've had open heart surgery, mm-hmm. so this was kind of a stretch.
So you're biking in Budapest. Why did you want to do that? Why was this one of your dream vacations?
Well, I love bicycling, and Ragbri, which is the great bicycle ride across Iowa, I've done about 5 times, and it's just a wonderful trip. So I thought, well, I'll up it and go somewhere else. And then I saw the bicycle trip for the Danube River, which is a dedicated bike trail, so it's much better than riding on highways and stuff. And I thought, well, I want to try that.
And Richard, now that you're back, what do you think this did for you? Obviously, this cost a lot of money. What was the benefit?
The benefit was just to be able to say it's something I've done. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, physical activity and the cultural impact. Oh, my heavens. Munich, Vienna, Budapest, Prague are beautiful cities, and I spent plenty of time touring them and just enjoying the culture.
Mm, Thank you. That's Richard in Northern Iowa there. Richard, glad that you were able to share that with us. And Jenny, at Travel Beyond, you all specialize in helping people plan vacations where they're in other countries and experiencing other cultures. Talk to me about that and why people want that and what they say when they get back.
That's a very good question. A lot of times people have had on their, and again, I'm using that term bucket list of just having that desire to travel to a destination that's very different and unique from our own homes. And with the areas that we are traveling to, or we offer travel for Africa, Southeast Asia, South America, it's very different. Many of these parts are very different from just what we're used to, even for Europe. I've been over to Europe many times as well, and or Canada. But for me personally, just seeing these different cultures and immersing myself into and learning about something that is so unique and so diversified from us, to me, I take that back with me and I can talk about it. I can share those experiences. I can tell people that you need to, you know, really get to do those experiences as well. And a lot of the people that I work with, they come back as saying the same things.
Expands their minds.
It's about the people, the animals, or the culture, the cities, and it expands their minds. Absolutely.
Right. And Jenny, Elaine, when you hear the term dream vacation, what does that mean to you? I mean, what am I talking about when I say a dream vacation? How is that different than any old vacation?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's probably not like going home for Thanksgiving. I just, you know, there are some things that are expected of you, and then there are those things that really satisfy something within you, something you really want to see or experience in your life. And I would say that that is different for every person. You know, for someone, it might be the Eiffel Tower. For others, it might be the Great Barrier Reef. It does tend to be associated with these big global icons. But again, it could be just, you know, I'm really into polar bears, and I want to go to Churchill in Canada and see the polar bears. So it could depend on your own personal interests as well.
And one of our callers, it was Kim, who traveled solo. What do we know about people like, I'm just going to go on this vacation by myself? Do you hear more about that, Elaine? And are we seeing more interest in folks having just some time alone or not being held back by trying to please too many people? This is what I'm going to do, so I'm planning that kind of vacation.
Yeah, I think maybe part of the impatience, too, is that, you know, people really are ready to travel and they're like, well, I don't want to wait. I just can't wait any longer. I have waited for 2 years, you know, so that could be part of it. I was just reading a story this morning in the Times by a psychologist who specializes in friendships, and she said that people in transition are more open. And she included travelers in that. And I thought about that and I thought, well, that is very true of solo traveler, which I think, you know, Kim sort of attested to, is that you're just on your own and you don't have that fallback, you know, partner next to you. You really need to ask someone for directions, or maybe you are sitting somewhere in a cafe and, you know, you're sort of compelled to strike up that conversation over coffee that you might not have if you were with someone else and just chatting with them. So I think it sort of forces you to be a little more outgoing than you might have been. And I think that's very enriching and also confidence building.
Mm-hmm. And then I think a lot of people, sometimes, though, if you're thinking about traveling alone, maybe they have safety concerns. And anything you can say to that, if people are concerned about being by themselves and staying in hotels alone or traveling as a solo person, should that be something folks are worried about?
No, that's a very good point. And I travel a lot by myself for work. Mm-hmm. And I have a few personal rules. When I'm traveling alone, I prefer to stay at a hotel. I mean, everyone's comfort level is going to be different. And I have stayed at Airbnbs or short-term rentals by myself. But I just kind of prefer to have other people around, you know, more eyes on me, so to speak. So that's sort of where my personal comfort level is. But I feel that on public transportation and other things, lots of people around, I don't worry about that. I do draw the line at sort of like really crazy hikes alone. I'll do hikes alone, but not, you know, not more than a couple of hours, and certainly not in, you know, areas with predators like bears. So, right. You know, you have to think about those things when you're alone.
Elaine and Jenny, I want to ask you about climate change, because I'm getting some comments on Twitter, and I have this as a question of my own as well. What about climate change? You know, many people are concerned that travel, especially air travel, adds carbon to the atmosphere, contributes to climate warming. And on Twitter, Lisa writes this. See if I can find it. Lisa says, I would like to ask what all these travelers are doing to offset their carbon footprint as they resume adventuring around the world. Are there reliable and effective projects that one can contribute to make up for the environmental impact? Jenny, I'll start with you. What are these conversations you're having?
Yes, that's a great question. And one of the things that we're doing at our company is clients that book any travel through us, a small portion of their trip costs is actually going into what we have called a conservation initiative. So we've partnered with a company that has projects for sustainability, carbon offsetting, and we've chosen a couple of them, including probably one in the state of Minnesota. So
people are thinking about this and have concerns.
They are. And as a company of our own company, we're thinking about it. Just the people that work at our company, we're always thinking about it. And even just our office has become a lot more sustainable.
Right. And Elaine, what are the conversations that you've been having with people, and what are folks sharing about air travel especially?
Yes, it's something that is really top of mind for travelers now. 90% of travelers say they want to travel sustainably, but 70% say they don't know how. That's from an Expedia survey. And the problem in travel is that aviation is really difficult to decarbonize. Aviation is responsible for an estimated roughly 3.5% of global warming. And of course, we all want to see that narrow. There are offsets that you can invest in. Offsetting is itself a problem because it sort of passes the buck down the road. There are sustainable aviation fuel initiatives going on right now. The White House targets 2050 for the use of those fuels. That's a long way away, however. Travelers, I think, are really thinking about sustainability and what they can do. And there's a lot that they can do. I mean, they can start by asking questions of the companies or the hotels they're using. What are those companies or hotels doing to support, local communities, biodiversity, and reduce their carbon footprints? Do they have certifications like Earth Check? Are they B corporations, benefit corporations that are certified to support employees and the environment? You can spread your carbon footprint out, go for longer if possible or go less frequently. Mm-hmm. You can travel in the off season, and avoid over tourism. You can think about ground travel, traveling if possible by train, foot, or bike. I mean, mm-hmm. you just had a caller talk about the rewards of biking across Europe. Mm-hmm. There's also things like buying local, ensuring that you're spending with locally owned businesses, whether that's restaurants or shops. So I think there's a lot of ways that through personal behavior, we can take responsibility for how we go through the world.
Let's take more phone calls from listeners as we talk about travel and dream vacations in Northfield. Carla's on the phone. Hi, Carla. Good morning.
Hi, Angela. Big Hi. Fan of you.
Oh, thank you.
I grew up on a farm where 2 days was a vacation. So
that's right.
I never thought that traveling would be in my lifetime, but I've had the opportunity to go to Norway to see a homestead. Went on a mission trip to Africa, so a lot of things were joint traveling in a van rather than everybody on their own. Mm-hmm. Did a bicycle trip in Ireland for my 50th birthday, which was almost 20 years ago. Went to Costa Rica with my son because he always travels alone and wanted somebody to go with, so he ended up going with me and my two sisters, and we went whitewater rafting, horseback riding on the beach. He went scuba diving. We climbed volcanoes.
Well, Carla, all of these trips sound fantastic. What do you think they did for you personally as an individual?
Well, I have to say, I really enjoy, one of the things I like is not staying at resorts. I like to actually go to towns. And for example, in Africa, we went to small towns up in elevation more. And you share meals with people, you talk to the school children, they sing to you. Other thing in Africa, you were also talking about sustainability. It's been like 8 or 9 years since I was there. They had a tremendous amount of solar power.
Mm-hmm.
When we arrived on safari, they said, can we take your batteries and recharge them? And it was all done with solar. And I guess my own sustainability is we do have solar panels. We have geothermal, and we just bought a hybrid vehicle. So,
well, Carla, thank you.
Other ways.
You've had some fantastic trips. And, you know, Elaine, I think what I hear in Carla's story, we talked about like how travel can expand your mind. And is that something that you've seen as well as you've written about traveling across the world?
Yeah, I think people end up caring about what they know. Mm-hmm. You know, and the more we know about other cultures and habitats, you know, the better it is for those people and the planet. You know, and when it comes to conservation efforts, you know, the World Wildlife Fund, you know, says that tourism is the biggest market-based source of funding for protecting areas around the world. So there is a great deal of, you know, positive outcomes from travel in terms of conservation.
Right. Let's take another phone call in Woodbury. Brenda's on the phone. Good morning, Brenda. What do you want to share or ask about traveling around the world?
Good morning, Angela. Thank you so much. My daughter was born in Calcutta, India, and my dream has always been to be able to take her back and see where she was born and see where she stayed for those first 3.5 months.
Mm.
And she's an adult now and has 3 sons, and I don't know how in the world to make it happen. I don't even know what off-season is in India and things like that. Mm-hmm. But if there were a way to make that happen, it would be truly the trip of a lifetime for us.
Well, let's get some advice. How old is the child born in India now?
My daughter is in her mid-30s.
Okay. All right. So we've got the frugal traveler on the phone. Elaine, walk us through some steps. If Brenda's trying to plan a trip to India, what can she do to make this affordable as possible in terms of a timetable or how she would begin the first steps?
Well, I think anytime you're planning a trip, you really need to think about what your budget is realistically, how much you'd like to spend. And then there's a couple of ways you can go from there. You need to keep your budget in mind. You might go to someone like Jenny and ask a travel advisor to plan it for you, because honestly, that's a big trip. And unless you're really willing to invest a lot of time in doing it yourself, you might be better off, you know, getting some expert advice. And I'm sure Jenny can speak to this more, but I do feel that if you know what your budget is, that there are advisors that are willing to work with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you decide to do it yourself, well, there's a lot of research ahead of you. You can, you know, I would suggest I always read a guidebook before I go anywhere, before I plan anything. I mean, I still put a lot of value in guidebooks. Those are really great writers who spend a lot of time just really boring down and understanding that destination. So I'll try to read that and digest it before I even make a plan. And then I might determine where I want to go within that, you know, place. So it does take a lot of time. If you don't want to do all of that work, you could also look at a tour operator. And there are some really wonderful tour operators that operate in India. And they're going to offer you, you know, a package deal. So you get everything sort of done for you, which is, you know, really kind of a relief. You're going to get, you know, your transportation. You know, they're going to get you from the airport. It might include your international airfare. You might do that on your own. And they're going to take care of all the planning, which makes it really easy if you're someone that's not used to doing it, you know, doing all that stuff on your own. So it depends on, you know, how skilled and interested you are in that. A lot of people really love the planning and anticipation. And for others, it's just, you know, time is money and they just really don't have the time.
So a lot of options. Jenny, this is what you do as a travel consultant. And so what advice would you have for Brenda, who has the destination in mind, but
right. How
do I even begin to tackle researching this, making it easy and making it, you know, fit in my budget?
One thing I would recommend, because Elaine's done a really nice job of putting travel apps out there as well in one of her articles, and to take a look at that, because there is one, I can't remember the name of it, but there is one app out there that they look for airline tickets, and you put your budget in, and then they kind of figure out when that budget would work for the flights. Right now, we are seeing airline tickets going down in price some, so that might be a benefit. I don't know when you're thinking about going, but
tickets to India specifically?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
I've seen that change a little bit here, which is good. But also, I agree with Elaine with a tour operator or even the India Tourism Board is reach out to them as well, because they'll have a lot of good options of companies to reach out to.
And, you know, when people are making decisions about, you know, a destination, it does seem, I mean, I think about travel I did 20, 30 years ago. There's so much more information now. And then I know this is what you do for a living as a travel consultant, but there are a lot of tools that people can do this on their own.
They can, but it can be very overwhelming at times. And like Elaine said, too, is that you have to have the time. It can almost be a full-time job.
Yes.
Depending on the destination you're looking at. Right. And then it's confusing. So the research is important for everybody to do, but that's where travel advisors come in.
Right.
After that, too.
And Elaine, can you speak to that? Because you mentioned the guidebooks, and then there are tons of online resources. Like, how are people deciding or navigating, like, how they plan these trips and research them? I mean, some people like to do it on their own, and some people, you know, want to hire someone to do it for them. What are you seeing?
No, everything, all of that, you know, and some people see something on Instagram and then they go, I want to go there. I mean, so travel inspiration is sort of coming from all places. And then people are obviously have many more options to do it online on their own. They, you know, on a dream trip, I might want a little more expert advice. Like if I were going on safari, I would maybe want to talk to someone who knows the safari landscape, because I feel like that is sort of rare information, and it may be a once in a lifetime trip. So I wouldn't discount, you know, talking to experts about this, again, with your budget in mind. And I did want to add that app that Jenny was talking about is Google Flights. If you enter your destination, Google Flights will tell you, like I am currently tracking a flight to Bonaire, and I want to know the best time to go. To go scuba diving, and it's sending me like weekly alerts and letting me know like when it's the cheapest time in the future to book it. It's very cool.
So if you've got the convenience of time, like if you're not urgently planning to go someplace like in the next 3-6 months, that can be a huge help to you.
The Google Flights?
Google Flights, or just any type
or just
of planning.
Research, yeah.
Yeah, if you're a year or two out, you can plan it.
It's a dreaming part. It's that it's called the dreaming, that you're starting to dream about this trip.
That's part of the experience. Yeah. It's the anticipation.
Yes, and it's
of
so
it.
Fun. Right. Yeah.
Elaine mentioned safari. People listening to NPR may have been hearing the fact that I'm going on a trip, an NPR trip that is, you know, we partner with a touring company, and we take groups of NPR listeners on trips across the year. And so in January, a trip of a lifetime to South Africa, I'm going to be hosting or going along with NPR listeners to go on safari to visit, you know, historic sites in Johannesburg, Nelson Mandela's home, as well as Robben Island. We're going to wine country, going on safari. And just thinking about that, this is a trip we were supposed to do in 2021. It was canceled by the pandemic, and now it's back. And so that anticipation of it is a lot. I mean, that has helped me a lot in the last few months. Also, if you want more information about that trip, we still have some openings there. It's npr.org/travel. Again, npr.org/travel if you want to learn more about that trip in January, the end of January. But I think about what I, you know, will learn in terms of the history and the culture of that country and how it will impact me when I get back.
Right.
And we've heard a lot about that today, where people want to expand their minds as well as have these great memories. Let's take another phone call in Wisconsin. In Amory, Scott's on the phone. Hey, Scott.
How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing
well.
Good
morning, Angela.
Hello. Do you have some bucket list trips?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I've got a few of them.
Tell us.
I did number 3 last year, hiking the Inca Trail up to Machu Picchu.
Very nice. Wow.
Spent and did the Nazca lines, and there's only one sand dune or one oasis in South America, and so I was able to get over there. But this year it is Antarctica. 18 days on a ship with 170 people total. So that should be interesting. I got most of the. Everything planned for it, everything booked, except the airfare, which is kind of difficult to get organized.
And Scott, how do you go about planning these trips? Do you do the research yourself? Do you hire people to help you, or how do you do this?
I do it myself. I do have the time to be able to do it, so that's a positive. I've been all over the South Pacific and just about every island in the Caribbean, except three islands, I think, and all over South America and that. But this one's proving to be difficult to get because I'm going from the Caymans to Cancun for the holidays with friends, and then over to Belize, and then from Belize down to Buenos Aires.
And Scott, during the pandemic, did you cease traveling during the pandemic? And is this for you, like, it's coming back, so I'm going for it?
Yeah, no. In 19, I went to Cuba for a couple weeks. And then I went, then last year, in Peru, the measures that you couldn't go into any shop without your vaccine card. You mm-hmm. had to show your vaccine card. So right. Now I'm quad backs now, so I'm not even worried about it.
Right. That's Scott and Amory. Wow, we would all like to be like Scott, but we can't all be like Scott. Elaine, in our final minutes here, what advice, again, as a frugal traveler, folks who have that dream vacation, it doesn't have to stay a dream, or, you know, any advice about going to some destinations that don't cost a lot of money but can still be very dreamy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, speaking of sort of the global economy, the dollar's really strong right now, so it is a good time to go to Europe. You know, in terms of getting more for your money, it's roughly parity, you know, 1-to-1. I think it's just a little bit less than that right now. The exchange rate is really good around the world, but, you know, today a Canadian dollar costs 73 cents. And we have, you know, record historic rates with the pound right now. So that's, you know, getting more for your money is one really quick way to stretch your budget mm-hmm. right now. I also advocate, you know, staying in small places and as locally as possible. And often those are a lot less than staying at a big grand resort. And I think you're going to have a more local experience mm-hmm. and perhaps the opportunity to see how, you know, regular folks live. Yeah. And that's interesting. That's why you travel.
Elaine, our time is up. Thank you for your time today. Elaine Glusak, the Frugal Traveler columnist for the New York Times travel section. Thank you, Elaine. We've also been talking with Jenny Michelson, the sales director at Travel Beyond NYZ. Thank you for all of your great advice. And thank you to our listeners for your stories. Today's conversation was produced by Matt Alvarez. Be safe, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.